Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. As you can see, we're all in the office today. I don't know why we're not sharing a camera, but apparently the advise office has such a large conference room that we're all in different spots. But it's good to see you guys. Good to see the advise conference room being utilized. I'm back with Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office, now a member of our investigative team, and Matt Kachansky, retired executive from HHSOIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director and now a member of our investigative team. Jason is on a client deliverable for the next few weeks, so Jason, we'll miss you. Look forward to having you back when you're done with that client deliverable. I am still Eric Rubenstein, senior director of litigation, fraud, waste, and abuse. So today we want to talk about a topic that's come up with a lot of our SIU clients. So we have some business where we're doing process improvement, we're doing some support services, but we're very integrated with a large number of SIUs where we're doing some of their investigative work. And one of the things that's come up as a training and education topic of discussion has been communication and learning the job. And communication really does transcend a lot of things. It's internal communication, it's external communication, it's preparing to testify in hearings, grand juries, trials, administrative law judge, things of that sort. And when we went to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center through our career, there's constant training on testimony, and you go through a mock case when you're in agent school and learning how to do all of this. And it's never an easy task because each instance in which you're having to communicate with someone, it's a whole new different ball of wax, right? So Wade, I want to start with you because, you know, one of the things about learning how to do this job, whether it be an agent, an investigator in the SIU, it even could be something where you're doing data analytics and you're having to communicate that data back to someone. It's that piece of the puzzle. And we want to talk about a little bit about, we're going to get to talking about the preparation piece, right? We always talk about preparation is the key, but part of that is also a good training program that starts from the day you start, right? It's mentoring and it's having good subject matter experts that have done these things before, because if you've never testified, it's nerve-wracking. And you know, as we've talked about, if you say you're not nervous the first time you have to go out and do something, it doesn't matter what it is, first arrest, first search warrant, first interview, first hearing, it's nerve-wracking. And if you say you're not nervous, you're probably not being truthful. But Wade, one of the big things is mentoring, and it's having a good training program and getting people comfortable with those things. So let's start with your time at the OIG. You know, there was a mentoring program. It was a pretty robust program. As an ASAC, part of your responsibility is trying to match up people, right? And what did you see as being those really strong positives of having good mentorship when it came to navigating the intricacies of learning how to be a good communicator?
Yeah, well, I think one of the key points to start off with is you have to have the right, as far as the mentor has to have the right personality. You can know everything about the job, but some people just aren't right to be a mentor. And a lot of that is a lot of characteristics that person needs is, you know, patience. There has to be a lack of being condescending. I mean, that's a big one. It's like, if you're mentoring somebody, they obviously need to, you know, be learning some stuff that you have experience with. So that's really just an approach that I think is not effective. So it's matching the right personality as the mentor with the mentee, but also, you know, just being aware that, you know, the newer agent or the newer investigator has a certain skill set, but it's, you know, we've, you know, having been in the job for 25 plus years, all of us, you never really stop learning. So the person who's fresh out of FLETC, you know, they've learned some things through the legal classes. And like you said, they've done a mock trial and they've done some interviews and testifying and things of that nature, but you're constantly learning. So you have 20 years of learning ahead of you. And whether it's specific, you know, with the OIG, we had a lot of like formal training where we have, you might be at a conference for a week where you're learning stuff all week, or it might be a one day training session, but the training was consistent, constant throughout the career. And I think that's one of the key factors, you know, beyond just the mentoring where you pair up an agent with an agent, where that's every day is a learning experience, but there's a formal education that goes along with it. And I think maybe I see a little bit of lack of that outside of, you know, the OIG. We are lucky that we had that time and those resources. But I really think it's one of the probably the most important aspects of that training that maybe gets overlooked a little bit. And I get with commercial, you know, businesses that any time spent training is time away from, you know, getting the ROI back, working, you know, getting money back into the system. But I think it's really, in the bigger picture, it's something that really has to take place that maybe is lacking a little bit now.
Yeah, I think that is. I think you're right. Like that is a great challenge. So you brought up a couple of points which I think are pretty salient. The first one is you use the word patience, and I will tell you that I am the most impatient person that I know, and it's both a positive and a negative, right? So being impatient gets work done, right? When I was an agent, I was impatient. I would be at the U.S. Attorney's office incessantly, wanting my cases to move. So impatience there was good. But being impatient with mentees, being impatient in trials and in hearings, being impatient at a search warrant or an arrest, not so good, right? Yeah. So, you know, for me, it was a very, it was a career-long evolution. So much so that I actually went and had to have the word patience tattooed on my body because I have none. And so I went and I got patience tattooed on my wrist because I actually found myself at times becoming impatient, and I needed to have something as a physical, it's a silly thing, but for me, it was a physical reminder that I would be on trial, I'd be on the stand, and I would put my hands under the table, and I would have the word patience facing up as a constant reminder. It's a silly thing, but I've seen people who've testified come in and they'll bring like a fidget thing, and they have it under their desk where no one can see it. There are things that sometimes people need to do to rein themselves back in. And, you know, the other point you bring up, and finding that fit is great. And I make, you know, Jason was my mentor when I first started. And I always say that he taught me the foundations of doing this job the right way. You know, where you go at the end is where you're going to go. But, you know, he taught me some foundations. And I always found that I would go out with other agents that I worked with who had been just as seasoned as I was, and I would learn from them. I would always find some nugget about something that they did that I liked. There were takeaways on things that I didn't like. But, you know, it's this evolution, and it really does start with having a solid mentoring where you've got somebody you can rely on to show you how to do things the right way and not lead you down a path where I think we see kind of consistently, people get hired into a job. It doesn't matter what that job is. And they get a day or two or however long the training is. And then they're just kind of go ahead. And there's never kind of that, you know, that check-in that you need for that consistency. So Matt, speaking of consistency, right? So as the Northeast UPIC director, one of the things that the UPICs tend to have as an ongoing issue is retention, right? I think, you know, for us at the OIG, there were periods of time where there was attrition, but I think generally speaking, attrition in government service is not all that much because it's not really about money. Once you're at your grade and your pay, wherever you go, you're generally getting the same amount of money. So it's not about a greener grass, it's about different grass. But in the commercial world and in the UPIC world, which is quasi-commercial, right? You're contracted, you get paid. There is a fair amount of attrition that comes about for a variety of reasons. It could be money, it could be working conditions, it could be, you know, things of the contract people don't like, which presents a huge number of challenges in creating consistency. So how did you work around that consistency? And I know, having worked with the Northeast UPIC for my entire career, there were people that were there for a really long time who were amazingly good people, but at the same time, there was a fair amount of turnover, and that creates an environment of how do you get people up to learning how to be good communicators when you can't keep them long enough to become good communicators?
Yeah, it is a challenge, and And what I have to really stress is what Wade brought up is the ROI. You know, when you set your staffing in a UPIC, it's to make numbers. You convince CMS that with these people, we can do this much. And then all of a sudden you've got turnover and you're never at that number. So you're always fighting to do that. So having a lot of time to do that type of mentoring is a challenge. And so, you know, so what we set up was, you know, an immediate training regimen where we relied on those people that were there for a long time, the team leads, the PIM, the upper management, to really be those mentors and those trainers, where first day they've got a 3-day training just on what the UPIC is, what the expectations are, what the structure is, who everybody is, what their roles are. And then that rolls into then a 3-week, you know, soup to nuts training regimen, like we did with our client, where we went over a case from complaint to resolution. Here's what an investigator does. Here are the process pieces that have to be put in place. And then from there, they are assigned a mentor. And you know, so they will start with just shadowing the mentor for a while, learning what the processes are, because even though you take that training, it is a floodgate of information that they're taking in. So they learn from the mentors, then they start getting their own cases, probably, and this is where management comes in, giving them some easier, straightforward cases to start with. So they just learn the processes and learn how to move cases forward. And then, you know, then meet with their mentor, meet with their team leads on a constant basis until they feel comfortable. And what one of the things we tend to talk about a lot, and it's even true of the OIG agents, is, you know, nobody is a subject matter expert over everything. You know, you'll learn cases and you'll learn, you know, regulations and policies one at a time as you have to come into contact with them. As you investigate that, you know, you're an expert on podiatry. You weren't when you started, but you learned it as you picked up more and more of those cases. And then so as a manager, I know that about you. So when a new mentee comes in and their first case is a podiatry one, you know, they have a formal mentor. Well, maybe I'll also say, go to Eric as well, because he's an expert on this. And so they learn that stuff. And that's where, you know, I think the communication comes in. It's got to go not just with the mentor and the mentee. It's got to go across the organization. Learn from the data analysts what they do and how they impact your work. Learn from the medical review consultants, what do they do? How does that impact your work? How do you help them do their work? And as you slowly gain that information, you become more of an integrated employee as quickly and as efficiently as you can, because again, it's making that ROI. But without doing that, you're throwing people to the wolves.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think, you know, one of the things that we learned from the most recent on-site training that we did, you know, our on-site training culminates on the last day. It's a very short period of time. It's only 2 hours because it's only a 3-day training. If we had longer trainings, we would make this more robust. But we were able to do a very short version over a 2-hour period. The class culminated with essentially a case investigation that was heavily focused on interviews. We gave some information at first, and then we sent people out in teams of two to conduct these interviews. And one of the things that we got as feedback was, you were a tough person to interview, right? So they would say, Eric, man, you were a tough person to interview. And I was like, I was playing the role of the person who you were confronting. Of course, I don't want to give up the information and, you know, all of that. And one of the things that we gleaned from that training was that people who even had been there for a number of years hadn't done certain types of interviews and didn't rely on their overall confidence to do an interview. Like, all of a sudden, they were interviewing Makachansky playing the role of a whoever, and they had never interviewed someone who was that in that position. And so people were inordinately nervous because they said, well, I've never interviewed a doctor before, so I'm nervous about what to talk to him about. So preparation, preparation, preparation. You've got your facts, you've got your information. The person that you're sitting across is almost not even consequential, right? If you know your information. We've also been hearing a lot about people being nervous about testifying and how to get around that. And so, you know, one of the things that we've been doing here in our training education is providing people with some good training about what is it like to testify? What is the environment like? It's not just about talking to people. It's about how do you get through that process, right? So, you know, wait, I want to go back to you for the last piece of this, because the, you know, nobody ever thinks they're going to have to testify until they have to testify, right? And that could be in typically on the SIU side, it would typically start off with something like a deposition, unless it's already a criminal case. But getting people comfortable with something that they've never done before, and more importantly, when it's something that is potentially adversarial in nature, right? Interviews can be adversarial, your testimony is adversarial. What sort of advice do you give to people, or what would your advice be to people who have to prepare for what is potentially going to be communicating in an adversarial environment?
Well, you hit the nail on the head with preparation is obviously the key. You need to know the case forwards and backwards, up and down, you know, left and right. You need to know all the details that you could possibly know. And then you need to ask yourself, what are the likely questions that I'm going to get asked, especially if it's going to be some kind of confrontational, how are they going to try and trip me up? What is the area that they're going to see a crack in, and they're going to break that wide open? So first of all, you want to not have any cracks. That goes back to knowing all your information, but you really want to predict where they're going to try and, you know, once the interview, for lack of a better term, or the, you know, the testimony starts, it could go down a bunch of different roads, and you have to kind of predict where those roads could take you, and where the attorney or whoever's, you know, if it's testimony, whoever's conducting the interview or testimony, where they're going to try and take you. And again, it gets back to knowing all the details so that, you know, you try and predict every question he or she is going to ask and have an answer for it. And then kind of predict what their follow-up questions would be. And if you're that prepared and you know everything you could possibly know about the case, you'll be fine. You just stick to your guns. Don't let them change your mind midstream if you have opinions on things based on the data or on interviews or whatever. You stick to those opinions and you'll be fine. If you go in not knowing all the details that you should know, it's going to be a tough day.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think part of that preparation for me, part of the preparation for any interview I'm doing is having questions that I absolutely know the answers to, having questions I'm pretty sure I know the answers to, and having the questions that I really want answered, right? Because when you're asking questions to people that are potentially the subject, right, if you're confronting a provider on something, it's having that series of questions. Because if they're gonna give you a lie to something that you already know the answer to, you already know the direction that's going, right? And in testimony, it's a little different. Hopefully you're in a position where you at least know half of the questions that are being asked, because in testimony, you're asked questions by both parties. And I think that when you're in a position where you're prepared well enough, you understand what the environment looks like, you've got your, whatever you're using to create your patience, to not get yourself agitated and excited. Those are important pieces of the puzzle. I know, you know, last year, I think I was deposed 6 or 8 times, and they were all done virtually. So that's a whole other ball of wax. But, you know, it really is a matter of just being prepared. And as long as you're prepared, you can be steadfast in your ability to get from kind of point A to point B. But I think we brought up a lot of points. Number one is good mentoring, right? It can't be said enough that good mentoring goes a long way. Good initial training, good ongoing training, and constantly feeling a forward motion on building confidence through conversation, because there are internal stakeholders as well. Sometimes you've got to convince somebody inside your organization that the thing that you're doing is the path to take. being a good communicator is how to do it. I think, you know, we've kind of lost the art of communication over the years because of things like texting and, you know, virtual things where it doesn't really occur anymore. Us old school guys like to still pick up the phone and talk to people. So, and I think that's where, you know, it has to kind of go back, but it's great stuff. It's important stuff. It's what gets the cases moved along and really does work towards that ROI. So we'll keep these conversations going. We're definitely incorporating a lot of this into our training and education pieces that we're doing for our SIU clients. So thanks everybody again for joining us on another great episode of the OIG Roundtable. Again, if you're not getting our newsletter and you'd like to get it, feel free to connect with us at hello@advizehealth.com. You can get us on our YouTube channel. All of the OIG Roundtable podcasts are there, as well as all of our LinkedIn Live broadcasts. Our next LinkedIn Live will be in September. I'll be speaking with David Blank, who is now in private practice, but was a senior attorney with HHS Office of Counsel to the Inspector General. I worked with David for a really long time, 10 or 12 years. We worked on a number of cases. So we're going to talk a lot about things like the self-disclosure protocol, overpayments made pursuant to the Affordable Care Act and the like. So we're doing that on September 6th. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. Guys, always good to see you. Wade, please mail the collared shirt to me when you can, because it's my turn on the rotation.
Will do.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.